Are you a man looking for an intensive program to help you overcome your sexually addictive behaviors? Gateway to Freedom is your answer. Gateway to Freedom is a three-day intensive workshop for men seeking to overcome sexually addictive behaviors. Whether married, single, or divorced, Gateway to Freedom will help men regain hope for a new life of purity and real contentment. The workshop is conducted by experts in the field of sexual addiction recovery. Your experts have over 35 years of combined experience. Read testimonials of workshop alumni at gatewaymen.com. Get all the info and register online at gatewaymen.com or call 1-800-49-PURITY.
Hi, my name is Jonathan, and I'm the founder of the Gateway to Freedom Workshop. I want to personally invite you to be part of our next intensive coming up December 5th through the 7th. So call us today at 1-800-49-PURITY or visit gatewaymen.com.
Welcome to Pure Sex Radio, training men, educating women. Are you ready to get real and start living each day in purity? This dynamic program is designed to educate, encourage, and equip listeners with the tools necessary for living a life of sexual purity. Pure Sex Radio brings you the best in mobile talk radio. Listen to real-life struggles, learn how to overcome lust, pornography, and sex addiction, and get serious about purity. Your hosts for Pure Sex Radio are Jonathan Doherty and Stephen Cervantes. Jonathan is the director of Be Broken Ministries and founder of the Gateway to Freedom Workshop for Men. Stephen is the founder of the Hope Counseling Center. Visit us online at puresexradio.com. And now, please welcome Jonathan and Stephen on Pure Sex Radio.
Good day, radio listeners. Welcome to this week's edition of the Pure Sex Radio broadcast. We're glad to have you here with us. My name is Jonathan, and I'm here with Stephen. Stephen, how's it going?
I am blessed.
Good. Well, before we dive in today, I just want to remind you, as we do every now and then, that we are a listener-supported broadcast. The only way these programs get produced and distributed is just through the generous contributions of listeners like yourself. And just as we come up to the end of the year, I know a lot of people are thinking through maybe how they want to make some year-end gifts and contributions to various ministries. We would really appreciate it to help us further expand the outreach of this broadcast. If you would consider making a year-end gift to our ministry, Be Broken Ministries, you can learn about the ways that you can partner with us by going to puresexradio.com. That's puresexradio.com and clicking on the donate button. Well, Stephen, our ministry is about helping men recover from sexually addictive behaviors. And, you know, recovery is a process. And I think in any process, if you're going to do it well and if you're going to have it's going to be effective, there are sometimes some markers that can indicate whether or not you're kind of
Hey, why are you introing the show?
On track.
I'm going to set this up. You're doing my job. I'm interviewing you.
Okay. No.
So, ladies and gentlemen, that was a warm-up there. Let me give you my version of what we're going to do, because that sounded good. But, hey, this was my job. This was my idea.
All right. I'll sit back and let you do your thing.
So, here's the thought I had. I thought, I would like Jonathan to tell us major life events that were significant on his journey. And so I asked him, can you please identify 10 major markers on this journey so that we can use you as an example, that we can understand you more, that you can use your life sort of as a template so other guys can get ideas?
So I'm like the guinea pig in this experiment, huh?
I wasn't going to say that, but can you squeal like a little pig right now? Sorry, because it's about you. So 10 major markers is the topic. And so we're going to go through this because your list may have 8 or 12 or 15. you may be introduced to ideas that are going to be on the journey that are still coming. And when you get there, if you heard this, then you go, oh, I get it. I'm at that place now on this journey. So I very much appreciate Johnson's willingness to be the topic.
And I do want to make a disclaimer before we get started here. And that is that I want to make sure listeners that you understand my life is not the example, okay?
We're just
using it for illustrative purposes so you can kind of see, okay, what does it look like in real life for a person to go through this process and what are some things that have happened? So I don't want anybody out there to think that you're, you know, to get your pen out and write down all these things and think, I need to copy that. Everybody's life and journey is unique.
Your markers will be different.
Right, but there are some significant things that there will be overlap because there are certain things that I think are essential and important along the way that are good markers for being able to say, you know what, there's progress that's happening here.
Okay, so number one is your awakening phase where you better wake up or this is all going down. So tell us about the moment of awakening.
Well, for me, you know, little seeds had been planted earlier than this event, but in terms of me knowing that I was off track and needed help and those kind of things, but I was just still stubborn and unwilling. And so the major, like, awakening moment was the day that my wife left because of my sexual infidelities and my sin. And that was, I mean, that just rattled my whole world. And part of it is because I had developed a delusional belief that she would and could never leave. Which that's a delusion. She's a free individual to do whatever she chooses, you know? And so that day when she left, it was, and this, by the way, this was in August of 1999. So this has been some years ago, but still it was a watershed moment in my life where the reason it shook me and really awakened me was I knew without a doubt I had to make a choice at that moment in my life.
You couldn't lie or con or deceive or patch over.
It felt like my back was against the wall. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like I had been trying to hide for so long in my life that when she left, it's like all of a sudden I was exposed and I realized I couldn't go any longer in my life without making a choice. The choice being either get on a path toward health and recovery or pretty much go on a path toward death. Because I'm absolutely convinced if I had not entered recovery at that point in my life, I would not be alive today. Wow. I would have died in the year after that because I was very suicidal. I was depressed. I mean, I would not have lasted much longer had I not entered recovery.
So you picked an awakening and to go on a path instead of continuing hiding and even using your wife for covering that everything was normal. When this crisis occurs, you're sort of laid bare. What are you going to do about it? That takes you to step two, or major marker number two, time to face yourself.
Yeah, and that was, so here I am separated. And it's kind of like, I like to think of it this way. There's the old saying that says, wherever you go, there you are.
Yes.
And one of the things that I discovered after my wife left was that no matter what surrounds me in my circumstances, I'm with me wherever I go. So it's kind of like no matter if anybody else wants to or doesn't want to live or be in my life, I don't have that choice. I'm going to live with me forever. So one of the things that I realized in that discovery was, as I looked in the mirror, I realized, well, the me that I am, I don't really like. And that carries a lot of weight with it because on the one hand, I didn't like the things I was doing, but I also carried a lot of shame. So the reason I would say the me that I was, I didn't like was because I was just carrying so much shame. So that self-discovery, that time of looking at myself really also got me looking at myself through the lens of my creator, God. And that really started to radically change how I viewed myself, realizing that there was hope for living in such a way that I could maybe look in a mirror and go, you know what? I like you.
Mm.
You know, you aren't the things that your shame has said you are. And also during that time, I wasn't only looking at myself. I was looking at my wife too, and kind of the things that I had done and trying to gain a sense of empathy for the pain that she was going through, even though we were separated, you know, we didn't have any contact.
But really get emotions working and in order about self and relationship.
Mm-hmm. And it, and some of that, I will say that some of that work that I was doing and looking at myself mm-hmm. was counseling was instrumental to that in helping me kind of laser focus into certain areas. So looking at myself, I would say counseling really helped me do that on
and
one level.
And that's an excellent point because that was individual work.
Right.
Because when you go to number three as a major marker, you have to think bigger than yourself. And if you want to grow faster, you have to go to group.
Yeah. Yeah, and I tell you, I remember when my counselor invited me to attend a group. I mean, I essentially was paralyzed with fear because I thought, hey, it's one thing for me to be sitting in a room alone with this guy and going deep individually. But kind of like what you're saying is to be invited into a community where you're going to kind of bare all and tell of your deep, dark secrets and the things that you're ashamed of and the things that you wish nobody would know about, that's another level of vulnerability.
And a guy that doesn't think very good, that's emotionally stunted, got a lot of craziness of thought.
Shame.
I'm
going
to go
to
group and tell everybody.
Right, exactly.
That's got to be paralyzing.
And you know what? And over the years, I've had an increased sense of compassion and encouragement to guys who are willing to take that step in the group because I know how scary it is. A lot of people who have no familiarity with the power of addiction will just look at a person and say, well, you just need to go to group. And then they're perplexed why this person doesn't just jump out of their chair and with great joy and excitement go, yeah, you're right. I can't wait to get in a group and tell everybody all my junk. And so, but when I did get into a group, the reason that was one of the major markers in my recovery was it was breaking me out of the delusional thinking that I was the only person struggling with this, that I was the only person that thought the things that I thought or did the things that I had done. And I realized there's a community of broken men who need each other for like life. I mean, to survive and to thrive. So,
and you know, it's interesting because I wrote the words think bigger and grow faster because you can do individual work, but it's like just your material. When you hear this other guy talk and his story and you go, I thought that too. Oh, I did that too. Oh, I need a solution. You just gave me the solution. Oh my goodness. Growth and awareness and connecting. I mean, it happens in community.
Yeah.
And so it does open up the whole growth process, if you will.
Yeah, I would say this. There's more ideas that flow in a group setting than just one-on-one with a counselor.
Yes.
You may get profound bite-size insights from counseling, but you'll get a massive buffet like common insights from a group.
Yes. And they teach you, right? Mm-hmm. Everybody in that group teaches you. So major marker number four.
Can we just skip this one? There's about three or four here I'd like to just skip.
So major marker number four, I hit the wall.
Yeah.
I hit the wall. I was doing so good. I'm moving along. I got this down.
And I call it, I dub it in quotation marks, day 108.
Okay.
Because, you know, I started my recovery, I started my recovery with some zeal and passion because I really knew I didn't want to keep going the direction I was going. And I knew, hey, my wife's gone. My motivation can't be to try to impress her. She's out of the picture, you know, so this had better be about me wanting to get better. But I started with this mentality that I think a lot of guys start recovery with, and that is the goal is perfection, meaning if you ever cross the line to any degree, you have utterly failed and you are a failure. So I went 107 days perfect. And I was feeling pretty good. Now, you have to understand, I'm kind of being a little funny about this, but you have to understand that prior to starting recovery, probably for 5 or 6 years prior to that, I hadn't gone 2 days in a row without acting out in some way. So I'm not diminishing the incredible change that was happening in my life that I was able to go 107 days in a row without acting out.
Do we have like an applaud clapping soundtrack that we could play right now? 107 days. Yay.
But the reason that day 108 was a major marker in my recovery is I stumbled on that day. I acted out. And I remember just the sense of guilt and just this sense of weight. And because I had this perfection mindset in recovery, this sense of failure. Not I have made a mistake, but I am a mistake. I failed. I am a failure. Instead of I committed a failure, you know, I failed. Well, so the good news is I had a counselor that was able to kind of help me see this from a different perspective and gave me an example of saying, okay, does every single child who is born come out of the womb walking? I was like, no. I mean, no baby knows how to walk. They don't have the motor skills. And even when they get to that toddler age, the first time they stand up, are they a skilled walker? They're probably going to fall 1,000 times. They stumble, they trip, they bump their head. It's, you know, in some ways it's a little comical, but sometimes it can be dangerous, right? And what I was starting to see was I was very much an infant in my recovery. Day 108 did not mean that my journey was over and that I was a failure. What it meant was I was a toddler.
Oh, that's good.
I stumbled.
You're young on this journey, right?
I didn't have the strength, the dexterity in my recovery. And so it started to reframe how I saw recovery, that this is more of a journey that's about grace and growth than it is about perfection. And so it started making me think, okay, how can I maybe strengthen my legs a little bit more? How can I maybe get up? Because that was the key, was, okay, I stumbled, but what does a toddler do? Well, get up. Let's try again.
Right.
So you get up. And so I got up and I started trying again.
That's good. So number 5 on this journey of major markers on your way to recovery and through recovery, if you will, is you get a chance to get back together with your wife.
Yeah.
You get to go home again. You get to have a home with a wife and be a little couple.
And that was the reason that was a huge marker was because it was such an unexpected gift. I going through empathy exercises while we were separated, my broken, I'm getting emotional now. I was shattered to my core because I saw the pain that I inflicted on this woman. And so to be able to see God work in such a way to give me such a great gift back that I didn't deserve, it was a huge motivator for me to want to be a different man, to want to work for her, to want to try to help her. But also, one of the reasons this was a big marker was when we got back together, we both realized we were scared. I was scared. I was like, I know how to be a terrible husband. You know, but I don't know how to be a good husband.
Wow.
And so I knew I was starting a new journey. It was one thing to think about my journey in terms of just sexual recovery, you know, like the addiction recovery. It was another wrinkle to put into it. Now, how do you become a good husband? Because those aren't totally the same thing, you know. And we've seen this even in our ministry. Just because a guy gets clean sexually doesn't automatically make him a loving husband.
Oh, that's right.
You know,
that's a whole other skill set you have to develop, right? But this is a wonderful thought you're sharing, that a wife is a gift.
Mm-hmm.
And so let that bless you. If you're a wife listening, let that bless you. Just know that you are a gift. You're a gift. That's part of your design and your value, is that you're a gift to a husband. And if you're a husband listening, just receive that your wife is a gift. She's not perfection. She's part of the journey of growth that your father has you on. But she is a gift. And go celebrate her and thank her. So number 6.
There's another one I'd like to skip.
Is a relapse.
Yeah. So Elaine and I had been back together for a few years. God had called me into this ministry. And I really started this ministry with, again, kind of a naive mindset that I had when I started recovery, you know. So my naive mindset starting recovery was it's all about perfection. And God started to reshape that as I went along to learn it's about grace and growth. And then I started ministry thinking that, hey, my whole job is to save the world. I got to save every man out there and it really wasn't just every man. I got to save everybody who's affected in any way by sexual brokenness. And so anyway, I was burning out. I was becoming exhausted. And one of my triggers that makes me, that sets me up to be more vulnerable to sexual temptation is being tired. And so as I was getting more fatigued, I was getting less vigilant about my boundaries. So anyway, I had a relapse, and it was difficult because I voluntarily put myself.
Wait a minute, I don't want to go there yet because that's number seven.
Okay.
And I wanted to weave them together, but I forgot to introduce them that way. So six is the sense that you got broken down, right?
Yeah.
And that we can all get tired, and that we're not bulletproof, and if we're going to break down, we're going to break down into some of the old. We're going to slip back a little bit, right?
Yeah.
And so I got tired. I had some bad thinking. I could save the world. I was cured. I was above this. I'm a minister now doing ministry. And here come the people. And they're here. I sort of had this thinking at one time. If they show up, God sent them, and I got to help them.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not bad thinking. But you can get overwhelmed when they come and come and come. Yeah. There's not enough of you. And it's like, no, wait a minute.
Like, even when crowds got around Jesus, sometimes he left and went to the mountains.
Absolutely. He took time out. He didn't let himself, right?
Right.
Get all confused into thinking, I'm here just because I'm a physician to heal. No, I'm a minister with a message, and healing is part of the big. Anyway, so after this little breakdown in the process, if you will, where you get, then what do you do? How do you handle that time? Because this has been about how far out now are you saying this would have been? How many months? Or
well, in terms of how long since my starting recovery?
Yeah,
it's 4 years.
So this is 4 years later, mm-hmm. into the story now, doing lots of good work, but still some old thinking that's in there is starting to trip you up and break you down.
And
then what happens?
Well, and to put this on a broader scale, I want the listeners to realize, and I know sometimes especially this is hard for wives to hear because they don't like hearing these kinds of time frames.
Mm-hmm.
But what I want to do is put it in a bigger picture that when you think about the idol that has been erected in a sexual addict's life, it is no small idol.
That's good. That's bad, but that's a good insight.
So what that means is the destruction of this idol is not magical and immediate. In other words, it's like you're taking a sledgehammer to this massive idol. And so there are moments where big chunks of it fall off and crash to the ground.
That's good.
But I think as you get closer and closer to the base, it's really firmly planted in there. And so this was another chipping away of that idol in my life. And it was a painful process to go through because I was having to realize once again, I'm weak in need of help. I have to admit once again, it's easy for me to drift. It's easy for me to be self-focused. It's easy for me to go my old ways. And so what I had to do in response to that was confess.
Mm.
You know, I had to get out of the dark and into the light. And a lot of times what that meant was, you know what? I'd started this ministry. Guess what I drifted away from a little bit? Group, connecting with other men. And so I was starting to kind of set myself up as a lone ranger out there.
Oh, yeah.
And so part of this was causing me to reevaluate, okay, what am I doing that's setting me up for this? And I started realizing isolation was a big deal that was setting
and
me
so
up.
And so this is number seven, time to reevaluate, right?
Yeah.
Because if you're going to go deeper now, again, you got to go back and put some things in place, but then you also have to realize I can get tired, I can wear down, I can't be all to all.
And the major marker there was that's where I had the voluntary 30-day sabbatical, that my board of directors approved and agreed with to reevaluate my recovery, to reevaluate and deal with my marriage in terms of the healing there, and also to reevaluate ministry. Now, here's the good news of this. That was certainly a painful time in my life and ministry, but the good that came out of that was, man, more of that idol was destroyed, and some really good foundational pillars were set in place for our ministry, for my marriage, for my recovery. So there was good that even came out of that. And that's where I feel like that was one of those, you know, when day 108 happened, there was a reframing of recovery being about grace and growth. When this relapse happened, there was a deeper understanding of that frame. I think previously it was, hey, okay, great. It's about grace and growth. Man, that really, that takes a lot of pressure off. What this relapse caused me to realize was, guess what? Grace and growth doesn't mean you hang out at the line, that you hang out at the boundary and say, how close can I get? And you know what? If I happen to want to go camp out a couple of nights over there and the other and across the boundary, that's cool. It's like, no. That's not what grace and growth means. And so there was a lot of wobbliness in these early years of trying to understand what does it mean to have the foundation of grace and the goal be growth. And so this gave me a deeper understanding of that.
That's good. So number 8 is stay the course. Just a long season where you stay the course and work on self, relationship with God, marriage, ministry. I mean, you just said it. Work on understanding grace and let that go in deeper and deeper and work on growth.
Yeah, and so one of the things that came out of that was a much deeper understanding of the need for endurance. In fact, if somebody were to ask me today what the absolutely like fundamental characteristics are of a person who's going to make it, when you're talking about somebody who makes it in terms of recovery, I would actually boil it down to 2, humility and endurance. There's a lot of other qualities, a lot of other things that are part of it. You know, obviously faith and things, but it's in terms of like the characteristics that you need to develop in order to be. And this is, so I would say that kind of after that relapse period, I really started diving much deeper into developing those characteristics and saying, you know what, I cannot ever think that I got it all together, that I have all the answers, that I know, but I also cannot ever think that I'm going to reach a point where there's no more work to be done on me, or, you know, it's like endurance. I have to endure. You have to keep pressing forward.
You have to get to the end, right? Yeah. Run the race to the end. And so 9 is a giving phase where you're giving back.
Yeah. So that was kind of the exciting, to me, these are like the fun major markers.
Yeah.
Because I started realizing, you know what? It is awesome to receive the blessings of a God who wants to heal those who are broken and addicted. I mean, it was awesome in those first years that God just poured out mercy, poured out grace, poured out good things into my life, restoring my marriage, giving me children, giving me a ministry. But there was a time in which there started to be a transition where God was saying, I'm gonna take you on a journey of greater blessing. And I thought, how could it be any better like than receiving all this good stuff? And the greater blessing has been, in essence, to give it all away. It's very counterintuitive.
Right.
It doesn't make sense to us to think that the fullest life is the one that's being poured out. It's like counter to how we even think. But the Bible says that He will fill us to overflowing. And so this journey is about learning to give, and I think that's where the greater blessing comes.
And even this program is a giving program. You're telling your story as part of your giving, right? And we thank so much the listeners who send us messages and emails that say, wow, we're listening. It's great. You guys are our audio coaches, if you will. You were the topic of group tonight for our group. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. We just get great feedback. So from this giving phase, number 10 is legacy.
Yeah. And what that basically means is I feel like I'm living my life in a way that says it's short. I'm not going to be here forever. We're not going to be here forever. So legacy means, is there anything of substance that will be left behind as a result of what God has done in my life? And my hope is that, yes, I'm hoping for that. I don't know if there will be, but I want to live in such a way that that's what I'm seeking to do, that my life can essentially be burned up, lived up, poured out, so that something of substance that's got grace in it will last.
Amen.
Well, listeners, we hope this has been encouraging to you. I mean, again, this is not about copying my life, but hopefully you've seen some major markers that can be helpful in recovery and to kind of maybe help gauge where you are in the process. If you'd like more help on your journey, please contact us. You can call us at 1-800-49-PURITY or visit puresexradio.com. And we'll see you back here again on the broadcast next week. Take care.
Pure Sex Radio is paid for by Be Broken Ministries. Visit us online at puresexradio.com.